Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. Excited to be here. I'm your host, one of your hosts, John Ruby, and I'm here with...
And I'm one of your hosts, Corbin Coyle. Hey, everybody.
Yes. The number one host, Corbin Coyle. Yeah. Hey, everyone. It is a exciting episode we've got today. I want to dive into our topic, which is, Corbin, something you've made with your hands.
Ooh. I am very bad with my hands.
Yes. Yes, because we've got an artist coming up later. And so this is a good topic that leads into that later on. Is there anything you've made either in your youth or recently, you know,
I know you're pretty good. I know you built like a desk or something, or a couple desks, right? Like you've done.
I've done some woodworking, not exactly recently, but I've definitely done a couple of woodworking things. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I know in high school I did the wood shop class or whatever, and I made some pens, which was pretty fun. It's very simple, like you just have like a log of wood and you shave it down and you like insert the metal piece, which was really cool.
You mean like pencils, kind of
like a pen. Yeah, like a writing
That's
device.
Cool. And
that was really cool. And I got like, I made them, you think like the materials were like $5, and I bought like, you know, I did 10 of them, gave it to my family members, did a whole thing. It got to the point where I was like only making those, where the teacher was basically sat me down and said, "You gotta do more than that." this is a woodshop class. You can't
so good at these. Like, I'm so good at pens.
I'm becoming a pro at pens. So that was pretty fun. But I've never done anything, I don't think, that big. Like, my mom has kept all of my like art class stuff, like ceramic class things, and they're awful. Like, they're just like, you have like a thing, this vase that I wrapped around just the clay in circles, and it doesn't hold water. It's the worst thing you could. And she has it on display. To embarrass me every time I go home.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, but the stuff from my youth is garbage. It's not good at all.
I was 25.
So that's youth. I think I mentioned it before, but my son and I did do this thing where you can follow this YouTube, like how to draw, and they have an adult and a kid, and the adult shows you like how to like do a pirate ship. And he makes it really, he's like, just do a half circle, another half circle, and then do a line here, and by the end you're like, oh my god, I can draw. It's like so good.
That's cool.
But you're literally following along with him, and my son does it too, and it's really cool. But to get back, the last thing I made with my hands, I did make my desk, which I'm really proud of, because I kind of gave it a little drop section so I can put folders into, like I kind of carved it into the wood. So it's got a little hanging shelf, I guess you could call it.
Interesting.
And then I also made a coffee table, but that was also through a class. And that really helped, because when I look at it now, I'm like, I don't know how I could, like, I don't know how it all came together.
Like, that was just somehow, like
a lot of luck and like, a lot of glue and, you know, but one of the things I like about woodworking is you can kind of like make mistakes and you can fix it, I think. So that's one thing that's kind of nice. I think that is like one of the things I used to enjoy a lot about woodworking is kind of being able to, you know.
To me, I feel like there isn't. Like, I'm so bad at it that I think that there is no way to fix what I'm making. But you're right. You can kind of shave it away. You can kind of trim from there. But it panics me. Something that physical. I'm like, this is going to be a desk in my house forever. I can't mess this up. I don't know why that makes me so nervous.
Also, at the woodworking place I took classes, this is kind of crazy, Corbin. They have a table saw there. You know, that blade that really, like, spins. Mm-hmm. That's, like, really scary looking. And supposedly, it has a trigger on it. That if it like your finger gets near, like if your finger touches it, it stops.
Oh,
it stops immediately, which is crazy with how fast it's going. It's just like,
wow,
I don't know. Yeah, wow, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It like kind of know, you know, we're supposed to, you know, that's part of like, but like that, those blades always scare me too. Like, that's a blade. It's moving fast, but like that was really interesting. That guy was saying that. Yeah, the old school ones don't, the newer ones have triggers like that. But all right, before we talk about losing any fingers, let's get back to. The topic at hand. I'm very excited to welcome to the show artist and production designer Betsy Zook, like book. Hey, Betsy, how are you doing? Nailed it.
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Any thoughts on the topic at hand, crafting something with your hands?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, some of the things that stand out about what you're saying are accessibility and forgiveness. Because you were talking about, you know, once someone showed you how to draw a pirate ship and they broke it down for you, and then you were able to reproduce that. And then you said, oh, wow, you helped me to draw. Like suddenly I feel like an artist. And also taking wood class, you had somebody break it down for you, help you find the pieces you needed, and then you were able to create something that you were proud of. And you're like, look, I can build something. This is possible. And then things like, well, obviously with the saw, like as far as like forgiveness is concerned, you know, being able to look at what you're what you were doing or what you are doing and accepting it wholeheartedly, no matter if it's a coil pot, you know, you did when you were 25 or whatever it is that you're looking at. It's kind of like a on the way in, there's accessibility, on the way out, there's forgiveness. So I think those are beautiful ways of looking at the process that you're talking about.
I really like that. I like that too, Betsy, because I feel like a lot of times we are our own worst critic. A lot of people are, you know, their inner critic is really loud, and other people are like, "Great, you're doing it, you're trying it, you're doing that thing," and we ourselves are like, "It's not, it's you know, it's not good, it's not this, it's not that." I just heard this thing which I really liked, which is, becoming better is more important than being seen as the best. I really liked that, you know, and I think sometimes everyone wants to pop out as the best. And it's like, well, that's really not the goal of something like this. You know what I mean? When we're talking, and I love what you said about, you know, accessibility and forgiveness. And I think that reminds me of that, this idea of, you know, you're trying to get better, you're learning, you're new, you're not expected to know everything, right?
Yeah, I agree. And using those points of observation as curiosity and springboards into what is interesting to you rather than letting it paralyze you or telling you you'll never do this. You know what I mean? You can take that two ways. It's a beautiful gift to be able to observe something and think, you know, if I were to do that clay pot again, but from a point of positivity, of building, of growth, of curiosity, rather than you know what, I just want to smash that clay pot, or I never want anybody to see that. You know what I mean? So I think there's it's all a matter of perspective.
I think you have to, even though I was making fun of myself with the ceramics, I didn't really care about making ceramics. I took it and I thought it was interesting for the time, but I'd never wanted to get any better at it. I think you're right. If you have some sort of that's the goal. Like, you want to be able to continue doing the thing. We talk about sports a lot on here as well. And if people are getting really good at basketball, they're not doing it to be the best at basketball. Maybe that's a side effect, but you also are doing it because you love it and you want to be there every day. You want to kind of continue making art. You kind of want to continue building. For me, with ceramics, I was like, I don't know, I'm just gonna make a little noodle thing and hope for the best, and it turned out great. So that's what happens.
I was listening to this thing. For some reason, Betsy, what you said made me think of this too, is I was listening to this thing today about style and like kind of like choice, like personal taste, and how a lot of stuff we do now is kind of algorithmed for us. So we kind of start to get this kind of like, we all kind of how important taste and choice is now, because we're kind of fed these things, like almost like fed these ideas. And so it's interesting, I think, to think about, I guess, a little bit of what you're saying of, like, you know, for ourselves, what is it that we like? What is it that, you know, is exciting for us? What's interesting for us versus kind of, you know, what the common thought is or something like that.
Yeah, and definitely I feel that's the case with art because the first things that came up were drawing and clay pots and woodwork, all really beautiful forms of art. But it could have been that maybe somebody handed you a wire or something different, or maybe somebody, I think for me, art can be so many different things. It's about making connection. It's about that process of accessibility and forgiveness and creating connections, making new connections. And that might be that, wow, I really like the clay, so I'm going to keep using the clay, or you know, the clay's not for me. Maybe here's a piece of wire. Oh, wow, look what you did with that piece of wire. Which leads me to talk about like enthusiasm is another thing. You're talking about the instructors, the people who make that thing accessible to you. For me, it's a lot about enthusiasm and the grace of that person who is showing me, you know, hey, have you thought of this? And then responding to what it is that I've done. Oh, look at that. Not that, oh, that's good, but oh, look at what you did here, and reflecting back to me, you know, like, oh, what about it? Do they appreciate? What do I appreciate? You know, like just starting this conversation of enthusiasm that the art is pulling on. So again, it can be anything from you know, maybe your medium is a piece of wire, but maybe your medium is math. You know, maybe somebody shows you numbers and you're like, oh, wow, you know, and for some reason, that's the thing your mind is curious about. You like how that works, how you like how you work together. So you just kind of play that out. You know what I mean? So like, for me, that's art can be so many, so it's like all around us. And so I think this separation of what it is and what it is not is like, is a little bit to the detriment of the people who are partaking in it.
Betsy, this word enthusiasm, you know, it's nice when a student I have has, you know, talent and enthusiasm, but if I had to pick one, I much prefer enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Really, I really do. Because for me, like, that's always exciting, whether someone's new, whether when someone's, you know, been doing it for a bit, but that enthusiasm, either from kind of the student or the teacher, I think you're totally right. I think that's such a great thing. I heard, a while ago, some of the best teachers, what they're really great at, it's not how long they've been teaching, but it's engagement. Do they engage the student? You know what I mean? Do they make the student feel enthusiastic? Are they excited? Because they're, you know, and that engagement word with what you're talking about, I think that's a really lovely thing. You know, when I have students that are engaged, that are excited, I think that's a really great place when we're talking about these kind of artistic endeavors to come from.
Yeah, I agree. And also being aware of the audience, if that's, say, I'm a teacher and the student, maybe because enthusiasm can show up in so many different forms, and there really needs to be time and space for exploration of those things, in my opinion. So for some people, if I think enthusiastic, that means like a certain facial expression or a certain type of engagement that they give back to me or I give to them. Yeah. For some people, it may look different. So for some people, it may be, I leave you alone for a minute and give you time and space and quiet. Maybe that's what they need. And then their enthusiasm shows up in participation. You know, it's not necessarily, enthusiasm can take so many different forms. And so taking a moment for that engagement to happen and to see what that conversation looks like, whether it's through words or the actual art they're producing or the facial expressions or just the fact that they're happy, you know, like you can tell, like suddenly they've changed headspaces, like the person that you're engaging with has changed headspaces, and you can tell that they came in one way and there's a transformation that's happening there. And you've you've helped create the conversations between them and you and them and themselves, like that sort of engagement can occur.
When it comes to the world of like production design and all this, because I'm just so ignorant of like kind of that space, like when it comes to this enthusiasm or finding the thing that you're good at, is there anything you recommend people kind of do, or like kind of what paths to kind of jump on, like what lily paths to kind of hit along the way, any sort of like art classes, is there any sort of like business kind of classes to be able to talk to people? What are your thoughts on that kind of world?
Yes, I think definitely showing up as somebody interested in production art, you know, I needed to have enthusiasm for that. If I didn't want to be there, or I find at any point like, oh, I don't want to be here either. Well, at this point, if I'm on a job and that happens, like, okay, well, we need to reframe this for ourselves because we're here now, yeah. Right? This is what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
So you got to find your own accessibility. I've got to find my own way to engage with the surroundings and with the people around me. So just kind of that, at some point that becomes totally my responsibility, because, you know, to be in tune with that, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of answer your question a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking that the answer to kind of like a follow-up question with it, actually, but I was more thinking like tactically, what would be if you were somebody new to this space and you really wanted to get into like production design, what does that mean exactly for somebody when you were like, if you were to go back to your younger self and be like, hey, what you have to do is you really have to get into this production design class, and you have to do these sorts of things to be able to be successful. Because I imagine it's a very fast-paced job and you kind of have to think quick. So
yes, you do have to think quickly. There's definitely not just one way to enter into it. I mean, I've talked to people who are like, yeah, I mean, I was outside on a break and I talked to this person and I was a driver and they were in the art department and we talked and suddenly on the next show I was in the art department because they just liked how we were like vibing and they liked the kind of ideas I had, or you know what I mean? Like, so it can be like that can be a point of engagement and connection that's tangentially, like it's not even directly involved. It can be like PAs, production assistants who are on set and they show that enthusiasm. So like when given the option, they will come to the art department that I'm working in and help any way they can. You know what I mean? Like they choose to, like when they have a choice to come and help and they show up. I mean, that's the biggest thing. They show up and they engage themselves.
Betsy, what does a production designer do on set? Or even before they get to set?
Yeah, so the production designer is looking at the story that's being told. They're meeting with the director, they're reading the script, and they're offering their unique perspective as it shows up in an environmental context. So that may be a room, it may be elements of the outdoors. You know, it's a conversation that happens between the director and the director of photography, the person who's in charge of the camera, and the production designer. And there, it's the life that they're bringing to it. So, you know, this is what I see in my mind's eye, and this, here are some options. Like, what about these excite us as a team? This one is exciting to me, so that's the one I'm going to put out there first. Like, hey, look at this, you know, about that point of accessibility. As the production designer, I'm providing a point of accessibility for that picture, and physically what can be in that picture, what it can look like. And I'm finding ways to communicate that with the team so that we can all get enthusiastic and excited and start to have that conversation.
And so, Betsy, with that, I'm thinking, you know, you could probably be on a sound stage where you have to kind of build the whole space, but you can also be on location where it's like, well, the style of the person who lives here is not the style of our show. So we're going to like swap out the pictures, we're going to swap out some coloring, and we're going to kind of, you know, put some plants in and things like that, right? So it can be offering suggestions to kind of tailor make a space, or also just kind of starting from the ground up and, you know, how do we want it to appear? How do we want it to look? Things like that, right?
Absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. So it's stepping into a cafe space and saying, I love everything about this, the doorways, the light, you know, all the things, except I don't like any of the furniture. So we move out all the furniture. You know what I mean? And you say, okay, well, what story are we trying to tell here? You know, maybe this is like a high-end restaurant, and right now it doesn't look that way because these elements aren't supporting the story. So what does it need? How do we find those things? How do we move them in? How do we create a space that supports the story that's happening?
With that, Betsy, I'm curious, how does the production design change as a budget changes? So, you know, I've worked on low budget, I've worked on high budget. I know as an actor that could kind of change things. How does that work when a production designer is working on, you know, the first short film I did, myself and my production, I had a production designer on that, Deanne. She was amazing. And we went to Cost Plus World Market and bought a lot of stuff, kept all the receipts on Corbin. And then when that shoot was done, we returned all of that stuff. And they gave us looks. They gave us looks, but we didn't have the money. But how does the production, I'm sure you've done that, Betsy. Don't shake your head. How does the production change based on the budget? I'm curious.
I know we all have to figure out how to do those. I really, that's like the most uncomfortable thing in the world to me. I think that there's something with the system that needs to be changed when I need to do that too many times, when it's asked of me, like, oh, well, I need this specifically and you need to make it happen. And I'm like, well, I can't, you know, like material, I never say that, right? I don't say I can't. I'm just thinking in my head, well, there's a point where I have to say this is what's realistic. You know what I mean? Like that bean sofa that you really have to have, here's another option, because that bean sofa is $7,000 and I cannot return that bean sofa. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Or okay, so if on one production, and this is something that I run into on a lower budget film, if I keep my own stock of furniture and plants and things, and so I keep those around just so that when you say I have to dress this room for under X amount, I jump in and I put all my stuff in and I'm like, oh, look what I did. And it's like, that's great. Where is that coming from? How realistic is it the next time that you get hired and they say, make this space, you know, you did it like this before, you did it for, you know, on the shoestring budget. So let's do that again. So do I store all that furniture? Do I make myself a prop house for free for the production so that I get hired again? Mm-hmm. You know, what does that do to the production? What does that do to me as a designer? How do I get pigeonholed for what it is that I'm able to provide realistically, if that makes any sense?
No, it really does, because I feel like that happens where, I mean, I've been thinking with actors, like a lot gets tasked on the actors of like, can you bring all your own wardrobe? You know, can we, can you shoot the audition yourself? You got to get all this stuff. And it's like, well, that's sometimes it's not fair. Like you're saying of like, am I going to be keeping all these plants and all this stuff and then bringing it for free and figuring out how to get a truck, you know, all that stuff. And I think you're right. That does get complicated. And it's something where we don't mind doing favors, but then if it becomes like given or something, like that's all, you know, you have to, then that becomes, I think, the problem. And I know what you're saying. Yeah, that's challenging. That's very challenging.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, I don't want to lose that work at the same time. I mean, I was on a production and I came in after I was in production designing, I was helping with it. I came in the process later and I don't want to like, bad mouth of process. I just, it made me so uncomfortable because for this production, a lot of things were brought in from a lot of different stores to create an environment. And then all those things were taken back.
Oh God.
I mean, like torched the relationships in the community with even the big box stores because they were like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? And so what conversation needed to happen there. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we need to find a mall or we need to find the actual space and film after hours because, you know, we need to find a different form of collaboration here because this situation and what our monetary restraints are not matching.
Yeah.
You know.
Betsy, what's kind of the separator between like the production designer and the prop department? Because I think those, they work together, obviously, but they're kind of separate. So what would you say to that?
Yes, the props, I wholeheartedly support what the props is doing because at the end of the day, the props are what the actor is holding. Mm. So there could be anything going on around outside, but it's what is in that actor's hands or what they're, you know, interacting with, where your attention is going to go because that's what's happening in the story right then. Yep. So to me, that like that and the production designer and the props master working together to create what that is intrinsic to the story that's being told.
Yep. And I think, you know, with what you're saying too, it's interesting for people to hear and Corbin, you know, some people watch like movies and shows and kind of, they don't pay attention. And then some people watch for every little like mistake or detail. And so the reason it's important is because, you know, production's keeping an eye on things, props are keeping an eye on things. And so where does this come into play too is like, if an actor's drinking wine and the amount of wine changes in the wine glass, you know what I'm saying? Like someone, you know, it's continuity, that's the script supervisor, but it's also like someone needs to refill that. Someone needs to have, you know, watered down grape juice that looks like wine or cranberry juice, right? And so someone has to physically have that. And so that's one of the reasons I always think, you know, Betsy, at the end of a movie, like there's all these names, like what are all those people doing? Well, it's all these things that like, if you didn't do, people would be like, well, he had the wine glass in his left hand. Now it's in his right. Now there's too much wine. You know what I mean? Now that plant moved over there, you know? And so it's all these things that people are keeping an eye on that have to work together. Kind of like you said, Betsy, they have to work together even though they're kind of in their own lane.
Yes, absolutely. And that is interesting what you're saying about wine, because the person, the producer who put me in touch with you, Sean, he and I worked on a piece called By the Grape of God production.
There was some wine involved with that, I'm sure.
There was
fake wine.
so much. There was so much. And I had an incredible props master who she stood there because it was a lower budget film. So props person was also the on-set props, or you know what I mean? Like we were wearing different hats, and she stood there, and she after every take, she came in, she had a little kit, she took the glass, she filled it back up, she wiped the edges, she put it back down, she was out. You know what I mean? And it's like every take, she'd go in, she would watch it, you know what I mean? Or if two people were drinking, she'd just have two glasses to swap out, you know, like whatever the scene called for, like she was ready for that because that was the amount of dedication to that for those people and also for the actors. Like for me as a production designer, it's really important that what the actors are interacting with is interacting with is something that has taken some care. You know what I mean? Because the actor is thinking about that too. You know, like, well, how does this chair feel that I'm sitting in? Do I feel safe? You know, these things that are up with them in their hands, how does it feel? How does it look? Is there what amount of care has been given that's supporting them in telling their story?
Do actors ever give you feedback on any sort of prop or anything? If they're just like, oh, it doesn't feel like a chair I'd sit in, or does that ever become more
Oh, I like
complicated?
that Corbin said feedback and not complaining. Thank you, Corbin.
Any,
Thank you. That's good.
I have some
Do, back,
complaints
do,
about
do actors ever bitch about stuff you give them? I just kidding. I just kidding. Do you ever get feedback? Yes. Do you ever get feedback?
Yes, in those instances, I feel like I know it's about facilitation. Again, if it's something that's taking them out of that moment, you know, the chair leg is a little bit rickety. Yes, we need to do something about that. You know what I mean? Because in my mind, the actor is dealing with so many different things and trying so hard to be in the moment and to provide this performance that what we're doing and any feedback that I receive is going to be used to try to, again, it's like all about supporting the story. So I don't want them to be thinking, ooh, like, oh, I really don't feel comfortable in this way. If there's anything that I can do about it, then I'm gonna do that, like within reason, obviously, but it's really important to me.
Betsy, what do you, well, let me step back saying, how did you get into production design? Did you have like a mentor? I feel like, you know, kind of like you mentioned earlier, I feel like a lot of times, you know, people have to kind of, it's a bit of like an apprenticeship, and then you kind of, you know, start to do stuff on your own, and you'll still work, people will still work with other people. But how did you kind of get into production design?
I came into production design from actually a theater background. So I studied theater and scenic painting and theater design. And
Great.
then I went from that. Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I love painting, actually. I spent a lot of time and still spend time. And that's something that I draw from in lots of different ways, and colors and textures has really helped inform the decisions that I make. So that I came from it there. And then I remember I was doing a, what do you call it, like a adjudication when I was in grad school for theater. And I met a woman. Oh, you asked a little bit before about sorry, before we started recording about things that inspire you, like books or things like
Yes.
that. And her name is Judy Juracek. And she wrote a book called Surfaces. And it's from a while ago. She took photographs of surfaces all over the place. So you look up tile, and she has curated all these pictures of tile. Dun, 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 they come up. You know, there's a book, and then she had an online version. And I met her during this adjudication. I had built a miniature because I used to do miniatures for theater of all of my sets. And so she talked to me afterwards. I did well. I got first place.
Not to brag. Oh,
and,
that's great.
gold
Congrats.
star for me. But I got to it meant more because it was coming from this woman. And
Yes.
I really appreciated her work and her eye and the way she cataloged things. So anyway, she came up to me afterwards and she talked to me about my work and then she and how good it was. And then she said, you know, if you really want to make some money, you should look into film. She's like, like if you want to like maybe go up as far as yeah, what you're making. So That's when it started to kind of in my head, like, oh yeah, like what about film? You know what I mean? And so I started kind of this journey into like being open and looking for avenues. And it was within scenic painting initially. And then when I actually kind of went into it, I'd actually gone into events for a little while. I'd gone from like theater and painting and designing to events. And then while I was in events, I met my husband who had a small film company, and he introduced me. So basically I learned by being kind of thrown into it, small projects, and because it was a small company. So it's like, okay, just do it. And it's like, all right, let's do it. You know, like, yeah. So that's kind of how it was through that relationship, but it was also through that path of like arts and entertainment that led me to being prepared for that situation so I could take my skill set and see how it applied.
I love that. And I was just looking up real quick that book Surfaces. Really interesting. I mean, like, it's so like nuanced and specific, Betsy. I was looking at it, and what it reminded, for some reason, what it reminded me of is my wife thinks like that, like, must be like you, Betsy, where she's like, okay, what kind of floor, like what kind of tiles? And I'm like, I don't know, like white. She's like, no, like this is ivory, and this is, and I'm like, oh my God. And it's so cool because she picks like the perfect tiles. I mean, Corbin's been to my house, like in the bathroom, but I love people that have that eye and that interest, you know what I mean? Because I think it can, it's so cool when that fits a space, you know? Do you feel like for a production designer to be good, I guess this is something I was thinking about, do you have to, like, you know, obviously you have to have like taste, do you have to have discipline, do you have to have opinions, do you have to have a good memory? Like, what do you feel like when you're talking to the director? What do you feel like, you know, do you have to have a lot of examples? What do you feel like helps make a production designer successful?
I do think it comes back to that teaching perspective as far as art is concerned, because each director is different. So that conversation's going to look a little bit different. Definitely pictures, lots of pictures can help. Sometimes it's building a bit of a 3D environment. I used to do that more actually in theater. I would just block things out and then, you know, in like SketchUp, and I would have this kind of little environment so that I could take them into the theater space and say, okay, like this is kind of what you're seeing. And so that can be a point of accessibility. That's not necessarily something you want to jump to, you know, and you start with some pictures and a convert, or really what it is too is about listening, is about hearing what it is that's important, because that helps to prioritize, and so that you can, you know, you can tell where do I spend my time and what literally is the focus of this and where do we meet and how, yeah, you're just, it's really on a case by case, like, let's feel this out together. How can I help you see what I'm seeing? Because it's like you said, like if you look at a tile floor and it's like, oh, well, maybe the director says something to the effect of, I want this to feel moody and I want it to, like, this is a story and this is what I'm picking up. And I'm like, okay, to me, that means terrazzo, right? But when the director might not know terrazzo, like, might not know what that is or what it means until they see it. And or they see it in pictures, they see it in use, and they're like, oh, yes. Or maybe, no, not quite. What I mean is, when I was a kid and I saw this thing, and you're like, oh, okay, so something from a different, you know, like, when were they a kid, and like what are they drawing from? You know what I mean? Because it's different from, like, if I'm working with somebody who is born after or before me, the imagery that they're drawing from, whether it's from film or their life or magazines or anything like that, it's going to be different than what I'm drawing from. So it's kind of about that too.
I love that, Betsy. And I just had an argument with my 8-year-old son about if his version of Zelda now is better than the one that I played with on Nintendo back in the day. And we had a great discussion. I definitely is much more complicated now. So we had a really fun, but the point is, the point of reference is very different. You know what I mean? And so with what you're saying, I think that's really interesting. And I love using images because that's such a great way. Corbin and I have talked about this sometimes, like with headshots, where like you're trying to describe a photo you want with a photographer, a headshot photographer, but it's like, well, if you have samples of like, hey, this is the look I'm going for, then they can see it and say, oh, yes, I get that, or I don't, you know, kind of like you're talking about. That's a really great way to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Because often what I come back to when I start using words is they can only get me so far. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, we're saying so much and nothing at all. This is when a picture happens, right? And it could be even a drawing, you know, maybe we're both drawing and that's the way you have the conversation. I've had conversations where you sit with a notebook between you, you know, and a pen, and you say, okay, and then the chair is going to be here and this is what I see. And they say, well, what if we put the chair over here? And that works totally fine for them as far as understanding the space and the interactions that are happening within it. And that can be the point of access. I had one person who could draw his own storyboards. Mm-hmm. So he would show me like, here is how I see the picture happening. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's great. You know, like, how can we support that? Or maybe have you considered this, right? Mm-hmm. Or people who, just have no real idea. And they're like, well, just give me options. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to tell you this. Like, let's look at some things. And I'm like, okay, yeah, definitely. You know, so it's about listening and seeing, okay, well, where is this person and what's helpful to them? What can I provide for them? And what is helpful to me too? Because if I have a really strong story in my head, like I have very visual, like when I'm reading or listening to a script, I see it. Mm-hmm. So I have an idea of like, wow, wouldn't this be cool? So then it becomes about me being very enthusiastic about what I'm seeing and also being putting myself in a position to be open for what they're seeing to see where those two places meet, you know, and to get excited about what they're saying and then give them opportunity to maybe like, hey, consider this, right? If there's two strong things going on there, like just leaving room for that conversation to happen.
Yeah, I'm thinking of two very stylized, one is a show. I watched Silo. I don't know if people have seen Silo on Apple Plus, and that world is really, really well designed. It's about a silo where people live that's underground, Betsy. So it's really interesting, kind of the way they set it up and it's being underground and kind of how. And then the other one was, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on like Wes Anderson, but we just worked on some stuff in class on Asteroid City and some of Wes Anderson stuff, which is very stylized, you know. And I think it's so interesting when you see, you know, a scene from a show or a movie that's like very like specific, and I appreciate that more and more now, right? How do you feel about that stuff?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so much fun to play with that and to see how the production design can be supported by that prior experience. I'm thinking specifically of like Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
And how he brings, you know, he painted and he's art department, like he comes from that perspective. So the things that he's directing even like, and the things that he's designing, you can see the richness of the work that he's done beforehand, like, and how it plays into the world that he's building with someone else.
I feel like I saw that on Pan's Labyrinth. I remember when that came out and I was just like, what is this world he's created? I mean, he's done that with so many other worlds since, but I remember, that's a great example. Betsy, how was your experience working on By the Grape of God? We're big fans of Sean. He's got great energy. We really loved having him. We had him on the podcast episode number zip. We'll fill that in later. I don't remember what episode, but no, we had him on the pie. He's amazing. I loved his energy. How was working on that movie? I know, you know, sometimes when it's lower budget, we have to like kind of make things work. But was it overall a good experience?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm gonna go back to that in a second. I do want to say before we move on that for me, I find a lot of inspiration in light and where light is placed and the things that light passes through. I've found whether in theater or in film, you know, working with the lighting department and figuring out what those practicals are and how they can elevate, you know, because you can cast shadows, right? Shadows are a thing, like they become a part of, you know, the elements of the room. And it also is a fun way to interplay with the actors. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because like maybe the surrounding is all around, but it's on them. Like it's on them and it's around them. And it, you know, like I just think light is a really, really important part of building that picture. So working with the lighting department and figuring out what choices I can make that help elevate the mood of the environment and can interact with the actors in a way that makes something feel like home or something feel like a restaurant. Those things are really important to me. So you're just talking about, you know, like what do you pull in from your own experience? Obviously, I love paint. I love color. I also really love light.
Betsy, is there a reason every director wants Corbin's face in shadow? Is there a reason for that?
I think
is
it's
it,
something about.
Is he too handsome? Is it
I think
too
it's
much
too. I
handsome?
Think it's too handsome.
Is it too handsome?
I don't know, but I'm wondering if he's overcompensating because his background is really blurry right now. He's like, look at my face.
I
Come
yes.
on.
Every You're audition, right. I blur everything but my little face.
But I
love
do
that
wanna,
though.
Yes. I do want to talk. Go back to working with Sean because working with Sean on Great by the Grape of God, and Marissa. She was a producer, co-producer, and she did a lot of different things. She was doing so many different parts of that too. So they both were. And the thing I liked about working with Sean is that he used to be in advertising. So he brought with it, okay, what ways can I help you support the production design through what I know how to do, which is reaching out to potential people who would offer their products to put in here. Like, oh, I have a contact at Mercedes, so we can have this car for cheaper if we put that Mercedes, you know what I mean? And so speaking to what we talked about before and like having to return things, I was like so relieved that he was like, well, actually, what if we, you know, I know this person from working in advertising and I'll give them a call and then I'll put the conversation in your hands and you can talk about more specifically, oh yes, we would love to have this many wine bottles or whatever we needed. And actually that gave me ideas about, okay, well, if I need this many wine bottles, what if I talk to this person? Or what if I interact with the, I have access to the person who is in charge of the space and they are open to letting me do X, Y, Z. It just kind of opened up the conversation from consumerism as far as purchasing things to consumerism as a sort of another conversation that's happening. Like, how can we support one another? Like, here's the products that we're using. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be like my Coca-Cola, ting, ting, you know, like,
sure.
It can just be like other ways, like, oh, they get a gift basket and this happens. And so I really enjoyed in working with Sean and Marissa about having those possibilities and not having to make so many returns. And that's just one of the things. There were many great things about working with that team.
You're great.
That's awesome. What's next on Betsy's horizon? Are you excited to work in a certain world that you kind of that you want to work in? Or is there something new that excites you? You said light is a big part of your work. So is there anything in that?
Yeah. Sense? Well, and it's kind of interesting to be perfectly honest because things slowed down so much last year. And I'm glad they did. They needed to, right? I totally support that. Everybody needs to say, hey, stop, we need something, right? Because, you know, it's kind of like a little version of what can happen on productions where it's like, you don't want to stop. Nobody wants to stop because time is money, right? Sometimes there's a situation where like, you have to be like, wait, you know, like, just wait a minute. Let's talk about this. So anyway, that's what I see. Last year was a wait, let's talk about that definitely had to happen. At the same time, it was, you know, time is money. And there wasn't, it's still a little bit funky out there. So what I've been doing again, and the larger context of what it means to be an artist is looking at places where my skill sets can be utilized maybe elsewhere that also gives me practice so that when I jump back into film, I'm practicing, I'm thinking about things, I'm problem solving, and I'm ready to go. And I'm also just, you know, thinking about things differently, like they're supporting one another. So anyway, that's all to say that I've been playing with staging for real estate, which is really neat to me. Yeah, it's so, you know.
Yeah, I saw that on your
house,
I saw that on your website, Betsy, and I was like, I want to live in all these houses. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, when you go when they're trying to sell a house, it looks great. Yeah.
Thank you. So I'm working on that, and then it's also interesting because I have to say, in film, you're trying to make things look lived in, so it's slightly different, right? Like you're trying to give a suggestion in real estate, and so for me, like I just did a house, and I pulled everything for the kitchen. I was so excited because the kitchen was huge. I'm like, oh my gosh, this kitchen is gonna be amazing. So I put stuff everywhere. There was like a cutting board, there was a strainer with cherries, like there were so many things in that kitchen, and the client and the realtor came in and they're like, oh my gosh, they're like, I love this. I love that it looks like somebody was working in here and they just stepped away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I love that too. Also, I probably props this out too much.
I love that you're doing that. And I think what's cool about it is that, like you're talking about, I think we are in a day and an age where people do many things now. It's not like one thing. So, you know what I mean? It's really neat that you can be doing staging, that you can be doing theater design, you can be doing production design on film. I think that's a really cool thing. I think that's a great skill to have and an ability. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And I mean, even then, I mean, the housing market changes. So you never know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you're right. Yeah. It is a very time of flux for a lot of different things. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Betsy, we have one final thing before we get you out of here. I know you were excited about this / nervous / excited. We have your best bad acting. All right. Corb is going to send you a quote in the chat. We didn't give you a long one. And so the idea is, so this is from a movie called A Fish Called Wanda. Do you know this movie at all?
I unfortunately do not. I know the title only.
It's an older movie. So that's fine. So this line is kind of a joke. It's a joke line. It's kind of a fun one. And what you can do is you can give it a little accent. You can have fun with it if you want to, you know, do it as a cartoon, whatever you want. And then we might give you like a redirection or something. But you just have fun with it.
Okay, here it goes. To call you stupid would be an insult to stupid people.
Ooh. Good.
I liked it.
Okay, Corbin. I want to see it as your favorite childhood character, like character from like an animated show or something like that.
That's fun.
what's that voice, Betsy? Yeah, here we go.
To call you stupid would be an insult to stupid people.
Oh, yes.
I knew it was in there. I knew something was in there. I didn't know what. Oh. I knew it. Was that a specific character or was that just one you made up? Because either way, it was awesome.
It's just one that came up with this me.
Yes.
My imaginary friend. I don't know. It's always been there.
I don't know. I could end on that, Corbin. Did you have a thought?
The only one I was thinking, but I don't even think we need it, is I want to see you like you had drank all the wine on a grape of God.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's try that.
Call you stupid? Be an insult to stupid people.
These are so great.
Oh my gosh. I hope you got a cameo by the grape of God, because that was good, Betsy. That was good. Who's the drunk actress in the background?
That's Betsy right there.
Lovely. Lovely. Oh my gosh. Betsy, this was so wonderful. Thank you so much. Really. And we really appreciate you kind of giving us all this information about production design and the world. And even before we got into that, I really love the way you approach artistry. Mm-hmm. I love the way you talk about it. I love the way you think about it. I think that's such a positive, supportive way to approach it, which is like how I like to lean into things and teach and be a student myself. And so I loved hearing that. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it was wonderful talking with you about it.
Yeah. So we really appreciate your time. We want a lot of success for By the Grape of God, that movie, and also for you with future projects. But we want to just say thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Awesome. Bye. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Eye Podcast.